American Auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
Let's go, Brock and Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, and the Seattle Sports application. Here on a formal Friday, yes, download that application, please. What are you doing? Why don't you have it yet? Go to the Apple Store, the Google Store, whatever you got to do. Go download the Seattle Sports app. What's the matter with you?
Just text app.
Yeah, or text app.
Shaming people.
That's all you got to do. APP, the 866-979-3776. Yeah, I'll shame people today.
You down with APP?
As a matter of fact, I wanted to start today, and we're going to talk tournament here in just a moment. It was a great day yesterday for the basketball tournament, of course. Continues today, and the women start today as well. But I have to get this off my chest, Justin, because this has been bothering me since yesterday, and I spent a lot of time thinking about it last night, and I just don't understand you.
If we forget something in ranked?
Huh? No, I don't understand you.
Oh,
I've been thinking about this a lot. It's a you thing that I don't quite understand.
Right.
Now, you and I come from different backgrounds, obviously, and there's a lot of, well, we do have quite a bit in common. We have quite a bit not in common, quite a bit unincommon, so to speak. And I kind of deal with all of that. It's fine. Like, I love our different experiences and how they've led us to where we are today. Right. Of course, you know, growing up in Montana versus, you know, me in the Northeast, like very different experiences, slightly different generations. All of those things lead to what can often be some really great conversation.
Oh, no.
But you really disappointed me yesterday, and I just don't understand you. So you're telling me you have a double Mitch Witch and there's one side that you like better than the other.
Oh, yeah.
And you're eating it first.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I think so.
So I started trying to apply this to other situations in food. So let me paint a picture for you, and I want to understand how you'd handle this.
Okay.
You get a Pop-Tart.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So I want you to start with the theory that you have a Pop-Tart. And it's not one of the great Pop-Tarts. The frosting doesn't go edge to edge, top to bottom.
Okay.
It's kind of
disappointing from the start.
It's kind of a like mediocre tart.
Mm.
Okay? There's a lot of the like just pastry without frosting area. So you're telling me that you eat that Pop-Tart and the last part of it you put in your mouth, the last part you eat is just pastry? That you eat all the frosting part first and then you leave yourself a dry, that's how you eat a Pop-Tart?
So
that's
insane. How do you eat pizza? Do you eat the crust first?
No.
That's sort of what you're telling me I'm doing here.
Interesting point.
Ooh, counter.
That's a good counter. The thing about pizza, you're right. That's a very good point. That is a very, very good point you make. However, the crust in pizza is really more of a handle than anything else.
Okay.
It's being used as a handle to eat the rest of the pizza, right? And generally, you don't eat it at the same time. You wait until you've eaten all the pizza and there's nothing left. And you're like, damn it, now I'll just eat the crust. Because the crust is like, then you eat your wife's crust, which is another great part of it. And then eventually you're full.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my original argument of the Mitch Witch is that I'm going to eat the part that I like first, being the fact that this is a sandwich and not a Pop-Tart, a little bit more filling. I'm going to eat the part that I like first because that's the most satisfying piece.
But what, you're not going to finish the Mitch Witch?
I will probably then move to the part of the half that I didn't like as much because at that point I'm getting full. And if and when I am full enough to not continue, I'm okay with not continuing on the part that isn't as good.
If you think you can't eat it all at once, I get his vision.
You don't think you can eat a whole ballpark sandwich? What do you have, like an infant stomach?
Maybe
it's a ballpark sandwich. It's not like, you know, the big nasty
maybe
somewhere.
Maybe I'm pairing it with some other calories at the same time.
This isn't like the great outdoors where you have to eat the grizzle at the end. Like, it's a ballpark sandwich. You don't think you can eat both halves?
Don't know. I'm going to eat the half that I want first because it's probably I don't want it to get cold, especially if there's a warm issue here.
I've been thinking about this all day, and it's bugging.
I think the end result here is that you guys are going to have to go on a mission to have a Mitch Witch.
I can't wait for the double Mitch Witch.
Also, I saw another text yesterday about the people supporting my point because it said, you don't know this, but when you have kids, you have to eat the part that you like first or your kids are going to eat that part.
Yeah, my kids don't eat anything.
Okay.
Well, my kids would never eat anything as good as a double Mitchwich.
Yeah.
Cecily only eats sugar, and Avery doesn't really eat anything other than beans. So, like, if as long as there's no beans and no, like, candy.
That's got to be hard at the ballpark.
It's hard everywhere. But at a ballpark? I can't take them anywhere. They're challenging. Anyway. All right.
I'm sorry to disappoint you.
All right. Well, you did, and I've been thinking about it. I hope we can get past this today. Okay. We'll see. Hopefully the formal Friday element will help today. So over the last, I don't know, decade or so, I have found a lot of things to complain about, not just in general, but with the watching or maybe not viewing of the game of basketball, which has just kind of fallen off my radar. It was as much, you know, a part of my daily routine when I was a kid and into my 20s as any other sport. I loved it. The NBA was just, it meant everything to me as a kid. And the college tournament, obviously the tournament was enormous. And I still remember, you know, staying home from school, pretending to be sick when I was in high school to watch. Like, it meant the world to me. And over the years, I've really gone away from watching the game. It just has not held the same level of interest for me at all for a variety of reasons that we've discussed on the show here over time. But the tournament really does always deliver. And when you make time to watch it, you can't help but love it, especially the first couple days. It would not be unusual for me not to watch it all the way to the end. Like, Elite Eight matchup, whatever. At that point, some of the thrill is a little bit gone for me. Some of the uniqueness, some of the just sort of like, oh, wow, this is cool. I haven't watched basketball in a year. Fun. But I just loved yesterday. It really is fun. And the first couple of days are, I would call, the most egalitarian viewing experience in sports, because we're all equal in the first couple of days of the tournament. For the most part, outside of a couple of freaks, we have not been paying great attention to all of the teams throughout the league heading into the tournament. We don't, maybe like the most serious among us have kind of watched the conference tournaments, and that's maybe gives you a bit of an edge. But what, you watched, like, you know, Horizon League basketball over the course of the year? Of course not, right? Maybe you watched a couple of big ACC matchups or something like that, but you didn't follow all of the leagues and know all of the teams and have a really good sense of what's going on. So when you show up, we're all kind of in the same spot of like, all right, entertain us. Who's going to be a big deal this year? And yesterday it was the kid from Oakland, and it was a lot of fun watching them upset Kentucky.
Jack Golkey.
Yep. He's he hit 10 threes, second most ever in a tournament game. Crazy. And it was awesome, right? I'd kind of forgotten about it for the last however many years. The kids were young, took up a lot of energy. I didn't watch the tournament quite as closely as I had previously, but that was awesome. Seeing that kid come up with huge shots and clutch moments, the emotion on the field, on the court rather, is awesome. And then watch the whole Wazoo game back and forth, really good basketball game, and seeing their style with the bigs and the physicality. And by the way, I love that style. I think it's so much more fun than a lot of the other stuff you see throughout the game these days. So I just really enjoyed the day yesterday. You probably did as well. And I'm sure there's folks out there being like, well, welcome to the party, Salk. Way to come back to basketball like you didn't know the tournament was going to be good. You're right. There's still things that I could find to complain about it. Right. 360 says, I hate that they have it on different channels. I miss just having it all on CBS. Totally agree.
Yeah, that was hard.
I don't like that either. Especially now with Fubo, where I've got to watch three of the games on Max, one of the games on Fubo. Boy, is that great.
Yeah.
Right? The CBS games on Fubo, the TNT, TBS, and True TV games are all on Max. Not ideal. Not ideal for flipping around. Sounds like Salk sounds very like Salk to let his children decide what they're allowed to eat. It's not about what they're allowed to eat. They won't eat anything else. I try to get them to eat other things.
I was forced to eat whatever it was.
Yeah, same.
Would somebody like throw it in your mouth and clamp your lips shut?
There was one time where I wasn't gonna finish my dinner, and I apparently had the flu or something, and I threw up after it. Wow. I was like, I told you.
Well, first of all, not a Salk thing, more of a Heather thing. This is much more of a let's make absolutely sure our kids don't have eating disorders kind of a thing. not a Salk, not spoiling the kids. This is make sure they don't end up with eating disorders. In any event, it was a lot of fun yesterday. I enjoyed it. I'm with you. I hate that. I wish it was all on CBS. I wish we were all watching the exact same thing at the same time, and they just went to whatever was most interesting in that moment. I don't understand why we can't have a red zone-like channel that essentially does that for the college tournament. Maybe there is one, and I just don't know of it. But I did have a lot of fun yesterday, and a huge, huge congrats to the Cougs and their fans. What a great way to go out in the Pac-12, man, to go in, yeah, win a tournament game for the first time in forever. And it was a good game against a good team. And now you got another opportunity against Iowa State.
And Moore
tomorrow
leads the Seattle sports bracket.
Is that true?
Yep.
And I don't
She's
know.
In first.
I don't know what I'm doing. I only got two wrong yesterday. In first.
Excuse me. Big deal. I didn't know we were talking royalty.
Yeah. You need any advice?
Didn't realize. Talk about sickos who watched and had spreadsheets and saw every team and every tournament.
And Kentucky was one of the ones I got wrong. I think everybody.
Oh.
I don't think anyone picked Oakland over Kentucky.
No. So did you have one big upset that you did pick yesterday?
Yeah, correctly? I picked St. Peter's over Tennessee.
And that was wrong.
Yeah, that was
okay.
Wrong.
Well, what did you do? What did you get right? Everything else was just chalk, and that was sort of how it worked?
Well, no, I
must have picked Oregon.
I had, yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple in there then.
All right, nice job, Maura.
A couple Maura. Upsets,
all right,
yeah.
We, as usual,
State,
bow to Maura.
No.
Maura, who understands to eat the frosted part of the Pop-Tart last and not first, unlike Justin. We'll come right back with everything you need to know. It is Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, let's start Need to Know with a hearty Go Cougs. It was a heck of a return to the NCAA tournament yesterday for Washington State. As they beat Drake in Omaha last night, Isaac Jones leading the way with 20 points. But the story was the freshman, Isaiah Watts, son of Slick. And he had the biggest moments of the night.
But the wing players are not looking to make a play.
Good. Isaiah Watts.
That was a huge three that put them ahead for good, just under 2 minutes to play. He had a steal. He had two made free throws in the final couple minutes. And the Cougs, as I said, never trailed again. They get ready now for a big matchup with number two seeded Iowa State. Kyle Smith, pretty happy after the game with how his team looked.
I was really proud of him. We got down eight. We kept chipping away. We've kind of been that way all year. I got all the respect in the world. Drake's probably the toughest team we've played. They were so physical and tough, and we just kind of we made plays when we needed to.
Yeah, you could see it. It was interesting watching, and they kind of gotten off to a nice start. Did not play well coming out of halftime, and yeah, had to chip away, but they held in it just long enough to make a couple of huge plays at the end, and that Watts kid really, really made a few nice ones. That was awesome. Gonzaga ready to play. They blew the doors off of McNeese State yesterday, so they will draw Kansas next. Biggest upset of the day, 14th seeded Oakland taking down Kentucky. Oakland apparently is in Michigan, not in California. They got 10 three-pointers. 10. From new tournament hero Jack Golkey, one off the all-time record of 11. Meanwhile, the women will get going today. Angel Reese and LSU play this afternoon. Caitlin Clark and Iowa will go tomorrow.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, kind of fun to see what was a pretty good preview of the Mariners' preferred lineup yesterday. Everyone was in it with the exception of Ty France. He was given a little time off because his wife is within a week of having a baby. So Dylan Moore played first base. But other than that, this was the lineup, right? J.P. Julio Polanco, Garver Cal Haniger, Rayleigh Moore in for France, and then Rojas hitting nine. So that's a lineup, and I'm curious to see how often we'll see Rojas versus Urias at first. Long-term matchups, preference are probably going to influence it, right? Performance as well. But I'd imagine the trust in Rojas might give him a few more at-bats early just because they know him from last year. Similar maybe with Canzone and Rayleigh. I don't know what that's going to look like. Yeah, I think you want to play Rayleigh as much as you can right now in the spring just to try to get him going because he's the one guy that has not kind of caught the good hitting fever that seems to have infected the rest of the club in a good way. So, yeah, anything you can do to get him going as well. So that group did produce three runs yesterday, mostly due to this.
The set and the 0-2 on the way to Cal. Swinging a drive deep to right center field. Going back, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Line shot onto the berm in right center. Cal Raleigh with his fourth home run of the spring. And it's now the Mariners 3 and the Reds 2.
Do you remember when Cal was in like double A and it felt like every week we would hear about four more home runs for him? And you're like, who is this dude? Is this actually like a big time prospect? Because he didn't have, you know, the pedigree of some of the other guys in the organization. But it just seemed like every night he would hit a bunch of home runs. That's what he's doing right now. He is destroying spring training pitching, just absolutely clobbering it on a daily basis. Good for him. Ryan Bliss added a home run later. Mariners win 7-6.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right. The Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter story did continue to evolve over the course of the day yesterday. A source close to Ohtani gave an explanation for the changing stories, right? So if you remember, Tisha Thompson joined us yesterday and said she had two different interviews, one at night, one the next morning with the translator. At night, he told her that he had been given the money by Shohei Ohtani. By the next morning, he said, no, I didn't. I just took it, essentially, and Shohei didn't know anything about it. Here is the explanation, according to Tisha Thompson.
Ohtani, who he's not fluent in English, is my understanding. I've gotten that from lots and lots of people. But he's now been in the United States long enough where he can piece together enough words. And he was sitting there, and he thought something didn't sound right. And after the meeting concludes, there's meetings, another interpreter is brought in. Ohtani, according to these two sources close to Ohtani's camp, say this is when he learned that there were any bank transfers and when he discovered that money was missing in his bank account. The next thing we know is there is a statement that comes from the lawyers alleging massive theft. They don't name who did it. They just say authorities will be contacted.
Yeah, it's a really strange story. So the explanation for the change in stories is, as Ohtani's handlers tried to determine what had happened, they initially relied solely on Mizuhara, who continued to translate for Ohtani. So are they saying that he mistranslated? Well, not according to Mizuhara. Asked Wednesday, that's 2 days ago, if he had interpreted anything incorrectly on purpose, he told ESPN, no, I have never done that. But wow, I mean, I certainly take him at his word. I don't know about you.
In.
Yeah. What a weird story. So maybe this does lend some credence to the Shohei as a victim part of it, as opposed to the Shohei as a perpetrator potential. So there you go. That's everything you need to know. 4:15 every hour here on the Brock and Salk show. Morosi was on yesterday with Wyman and Bob, and he's like, yeah, let's maybe try to like wait before we pass judgment.
It's impossible to say. We are at the outset of a very, very big story, right? About where all this leads. And I think that it's our responsibility to withhold judgment on some level to everybody involved here. Because the one thing I guess I would say as well, when you pull back a little bit, MLB at this point in time is not actively investigating this.
No, they're not. But don't you think they're going to be real soon? Or at the they're going to, well, but I guess it's because the feds are going to do it.
Got it. Okay.
And if the feds are going to do it, then baseball is just going to support them however they would like. But yeah, I would sure like to hear from somebody in Major League Baseball at some point to at least acknowledge that they're aware of this and that they're cooperating or whatever else it is they need to say to just acknowledge that this story is happening. Maybe everybody just needs to get back from Seoul, South Korea. Once that happens, maybe then we'll start to get maybe some normalcy around this. But as of today, just absolutely crazy, crazy story. We'll give you guys a little bit more on it coming up in a minute. I should remind everyone, opening day right around the corner, and we do want to send one of you and three of your friends to the game. All you got to do is open the Seattle Sports application and click the Win tab. Find out how. If you don't already have the app, and shame on you if you don't, but if you don't, all you got to do is text the word app, APP. Text it to 866-979-3776, and we will just send you a link to download it right now. Don't miss out on your chance to join the fun on opening day. This contest will run through Sunday, March 24th. All right. Yeah, I said that we've got a little extra on this story. Tisha Thompson, who has been the reporter at ESPN, she broke this story. She was kind enough to take a few minutes and join us yesterday. Fascinating interview. And if you missed it, we want to give you an opportunity to hear it next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Get in the freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike. Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
All right, no Brock today. He'll be back tomorrow. Brady Henderson filling in from ESPN.com. And actually, we're going to stay in the ESPN family here and talk to Tisha Thompson, who's an investigative reporter with the network. And she's been on this Shohei Ohtani interpreter story. And it is a crazy one. Tisha, first of all, people should know, ridiculous resume. Oh, my gosh. Fifth generation reporter, and was a big part of what's gone on in the investigation into the Washington Commanders franchise. So, Tisha, thanks for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It's the family business, I guess you could say, yeah, being seriously. A journalist. We've been doing it since there's been a Thompson byline. My understanding is, if you believe family legend, Thompsons have had a byline since the 1880s continuously.
Wow. I would only imagine. Isn't that bonkers? That is kind of crazy. Yeah. I'd love to know what they were covering then. I guess it was not quite this, because this is just a crazy story. What do we know?
Well, we have a lot going on. I think for folks who are just catching up, there was a series of events that happened between Tuesday night into Wednesday midday, where a lot suddenly started to change. I think it's easy to say that it really for us began this week when, based on multiple sources and bank documents that I had seen, we were reaching out to Ohtani's spokesperson to ask why there was a bank account with Shohei Ohtani's name on it that was sending wire transfers to a Southern California bookmaker, and an operation, I should say, run by a Southern California bookmaker. And that bookmaker and the operation around it, according to multiple sources, is currently under investigation by federal authorities in California. And so we wanted to understand, why is Ohtani's name on these wire transfers? I saw some of them. We had multiple sourcing telling us that at least $4.5 million had been sent from that bank account. So through a series of events that happened, and I'm going to cut to the chase. I get on the phone with Ipe Mitsuhara. He is Ohtani's longtime interpreter. And people characterize him as Ohtani's closest friend, that they have a bond as close as brothers, and that they there's a story out there from some years ago that says that Mitsuhara spent more time with Ohtani than he did with his own wife. So these are two men that were very, very close to each other. And so he and I get on the phone, and I spend about 90 minutes on the phone with him. This was late Tuesday night. It was a couple of hours before the season opener between the Dodgers and the Padres, which was taking place in South Korea. So for Mitsuhara, it was the morning time in South Korea. It was a couple of hours before the game. And he tells me in that first, and it's important that people understand, this is what he first tells me. He tells me that they are his gaming debts, that he got in over his head, that he went, this is what he first says, that he went to Ohtani and asked him to pay off the debts. Ohtani wasn't happy about it, but eventually offers to pay them. And following instructions that Mitsuhara had received and then relayed to Ohtani, logged into his computer and made the wire transfer payments. We're in the final stages of putting our story together Wednesday morning, midday, and we get a statement through Ohtani's spokesperson from Ohtani's attorneys saying that there has been a massive theft, and that they are turning it over to authorities. And we then, you know, start making a bunch of phone calls to try to understand what has just happened. And of course, I call Mitsuhara, and he tells, and I say, Ipe, did you lie to me last night? And he says, yes. And he, through a series of questions and answers, tells me that Ohtani did not, this is the second conversation with Mitsuhara, he says he did not tell Ohtani about the gaming debts, and that Ohtani did not make the payments.
That is a crazy story. I got to tell you. I mean, like, it reads crazy, but hearing you describe, you know, the timeline of it makes it sound even more bizarre. So it kind of leads me to two quick follow-ups that I have to ask.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah, of course.
What does Ipe make? $150,000 a year? I mean, he doesn't make millions of dollars a year,
right? That's a really interesting question. We had sourcing that was, you know, putting an interpreter's pay. Initially we were hearing, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars.
Okay.
I've had some of my colleagues here, you know, that some interpreters make 85-ish thousand dollars.
All right, but it's not enough money to get a $4.5 million credit line.
Well, you know, I think it's hard for you and me to speculate on that because we don't operate bookmaking operations. At least I don't.
I don't either, for the
record. So, you know, I can only work on what I've been told.
Okay.
And the one thing that has not been clawed back, or I should say the one thing, but, you know, one of the things that has not been clawed back between the two interviews with Mitsuhara is that he was extended credit. This is what he told me. He was extended credit by the bookmaker that sources say is under investigation, and he never had to put any money up front, and he was allowed to continue to gamble.
Must have been a heck of a credit line that he was extended, which is pretty impressive. I guess the other question then becomes the dates on the transfers. How do those match up with either of his two stories, or do we not know enough yet?
Well, no. Thus far, let me just say this is an evolving story.
Right.
Right. Mitsuhara did not spend as much time on the phone with me the second time we talked. It was a fairly short conversation and was not, you know, was not giving me a lot of details. But so far, no one is debating that it was Mitsuhara who was placing the bets. Tell me what you really want me to get at here, because there's no debate over whether he was making the bets at this juncture, if that makes any sense.
Yes. No, I think I'm not sure what I was getting at other than trying to, as you were talking, I was thinking, oh, I wonder if the dates back up the fact that Shohei came in later and said, hey, I want to cover this for you. Did the dates back that up?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Forgive me. I have so much information in my brain right now. So what he is not debating and what I don't have any reason to believe has changed at this point is that the betting, according to Mitsuhara's first interview, began in 2021 after he meets this bookmaker at a poker game in San Diego at a hotel after they had played the Padres. And he begins placing the bets in 2021. Through 2022, he gets increasingly in over his head. He calls himself a terrible gambler. He is now beginning to really get in trouble by 2023 in his first version of the story, which he then recanted. He goes to Ohtani in 2023. However, the payments, according to my sourcing, that come out of the account that has the name Shohei Ohtani on it, were being made in 2023, and that jives with what Mitsuhara told me in that first interview. He was vague on dates, but I saw a wire transfer from September, and I saw a wire transfer from October.
Tisha,
I've been told there's more than what I saw.
Pardon me. Yeah, Tisha, what have you learned about the guy running the bookmaking operation and any sort of contact that he may or may not have had with Ohtani directly, or does it sound like that was all with Mizuhara?
Okay, thank you for that, because I think it's really, really important that the lawyer representing the bookmaker says that the bookmaker never spoke or had contact with Ohtani. I've been told from multiple sources that the bookmaker only dealt with Mitsuhara.
So I've never made a lot of major wire transfers in my life. I don't roll quite that deep, but I've got friends who occasionally make wire transfers. And my understanding is you got to approve them verbally, right? Like they go through a bunch of different checks when you make a wire transfer. It's not just that you have to have the account and the routing number and all that, because obviously it's plausible that Ohtani could have given that to his interpreter. But do you know, how much do you know about just the way wire transfers are approved?
I'm not a banker. That is one of, so here's what I don't want to do. I don't want to speculate for sure about what did and didn't happen. There are two people who you would think would know, and that's Ohtani and Mitsuhara. I will be interested to see if there are more people that begin to ask questions about that. As Ohtani's lawyers said to us yesterday and have said to many people now through media outlets, that there are allegations of massive theft, to use their words, and that they're sending it to the authorities. So those are the questions that we're trying to figure out ourselves.
Tisha, last question from me. I'm just curious, what has been the MLB's response so far, if any?
So there's not a ton of precedent for this, unlike, you know, say doping or drug use, where, you know, there's it's a pretty cut and dry. This is what happens if you get caught with MLB. There's just not a lot of precedent for this. Obviously, everybody always talks about Pete Rose, but in this modern era of sports betting, there are rules. And my understanding of the rules, based on what a variety of people have told us, is, and you can look up what the rules are as well, is that you need not, if you're an athlete with MLB, you may not use a bookmaker. You cannot do that. You can't use a bookie. You may never bet on baseball. I mean, Pete Rose, right? Do not bet on baseball. But beyond baseball, if bookmaking is legal, my understanding is that athletes can do that. You can't use a bookie. You can't bet on baseball, but you can bet because it's now legal in sports bet, I should say. So we are very curious to know what's going to happen here. Mitsuhara got fired like instantly. I mean, it was fast. I think I got the statement and he'd been fired within just a couple of hours from getting the statement. There's also, you know, questions about what's happening with the federal investigation. And my understanding, based on the sourcing we have right now, is that MLB is closely following what the feds are doing and maybe taking their cues from what develops with the federal investigation. They want to know what the feds have, I suspect, is what's going on.
So let me ask you this final question. I know you got to run and we do as well. And we really appreciate it. Just awesome work and glad to make your acquaintance here on the air. I wish we'd, I'm sorry, it comes under these sort of weird circumstances, but
that's all right. It's what I do. I tend to meet people when, you know, there's news like this.
I love it. What questions are you going to be asking next? Like, what information would you like to know?
I'm really trying to figure out, you know, when I'm not talking to you guys, what I'm trying to do is figure out which authorities have been contacted. We have a source close to what's going on. With knowledge, who told me yesterday when all of this was breaking that it's complicated because so many of the people that, you know, would be part of all of this are currently in South Korea. You know, the Padres and the Dodgers just played their second game this morning if you're on Eastern time. And that game just concluded, like an hour or two ago. Mm-hmm. So you've got the Dodgers organization there. You've got a lot of people, I shouldn't say a lot of people, but you have people who are Ohtani's camp, you know, the people that support him. I mean, he is a major league star. So he's got people. And then you have Ohtani and Mitsuhara, both also still in South Korea. So we're trying to figure that out. We're obviously following the federal investigation. It's important to mention the bookmaker has not been charged with anything that we are aware of at this point. We were told yesterday that neither Ohtani nor Mitsuhara have been asked any questions by federal authorities. So I just want to make sure that's all clear out there, that this is this investigation. We want to know what's going on, I think, as much as anybody.
Crazy. What a story. Thank you so much. Let's stay in touch because as this story develops, something tells me there may be more to this story that will come out here over the course of the next few
weeks. I think I'll be reporting on this for a while. Yeah,
this is like the type of thing that, it's pretty awesome. Good for you. We appreciate it. Let's talk again. Thank you so much, Tisha.
Thank you for having me.
All right, there you
thank
go.
Thank you for having me.
There's Tisha Thompson from ESPN. I enjoyed talking to her yesterday. I thought that was a really great interview. And she, yes, did continue on this beat over the course of the day. A lot of texts coming in. Even during the replay, what are you kidding me, Mike? I make $80,000 a year. Capital One just gave me a $4.5 million credit limit, obviously. Yeah, that part is definitely a sketchy element to it. That's for sure. A lot of people writing in about bank transfers and wire transfers saying they require additional verification. That much I think I understand. One question I was trying to figure out yesterday is how this poor guy is going to get home. Right. So he and I did a little research on this. I wanted to update you guys on this because I was thinking, OK, so this guy's in Korea. He's from here. He lives here. He's been fired. He didn't have a plane ticket home. He was going to take the charter home. There's no way the Dodgers can let him on that charter. Right. So what does he do? Like he's four and a half. He doesn't have any money. As we know, Shohei's got to pay off all of his debts. Shohei's not covering him anymore. How does this guy get home? Well, how much do you think a last minute ticket is? From Seoul
to LAX.
To LAX.
I did
the research yesterday for a ticket today.
$1,900.
More, how much do you think a ticket home from Seoul, South Korea would cost one day out, 24 hours?
$3,000.
$3,000. Maura, that's what I thought. The answer was like $650. I was like, what? I can't fly to freaking Vegas to meet my buddies for that. And yet it's only $650 to get home? What, are you kidding me? So he lucked out on that one. I was very surprised. I thought it was going to be.
I mean, if they're as close as they are, like I thought for a while, I was like, does he potentially live with Shohei? Like if he has to do so much work with him daily?
Yeah.
He quit his he voluntarily quit from the Angels during the lockout so he could continue maintaining his relationship with Ohtani.
Yeah. And he
it doesn't sound like he's got a big life outside of Ohtani is my point. So
no, his life is Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
He spends, as she said, more time with him than with his wife. And it was an interesting phrasing that, you know, they're as close as two men can be. So, yeah, I do think that it's just a strange story. And I found myself talking about it with everybody I knew yesterday, all of my various text threads. This was the number one thing everybody was talking about. It takes a giant and interesting and speculative kind of story like this to blow even March Madness off the top of the conversational, you know, pyramid. But this did. I mean, it was just, it's that interesting because none of it really makes sense. And, you know, the rest of the story that came out yesterday after that interview, none of it was really any better. Right. Well,
and let's also take into account here, it's more fascinating made by the fact that Shohei is such a private person.
Right.
We know almost nothing. So this is just like a peek into who maybe Shohei is.
It is. And
that is too much for most people.
Well, and I would say that Shohei maybe falls victim to something here, which is that we've seen the Michael Jordan story. We've seen the Tiger Woods story.
Right.
Now, those played out over a much longer period of time, mm-hmm. right? It wasn't, you know, within their first couple of years of superstardom that we found out sort of what was really going on. Even Magic Johnson, I think there's probably an element of what was really going on behind the scenes.
I just thought of Phil with all of his gambling stuff, too.
Absolutely, right? I mean, like, those stories are not uncommon. So I think that there is an ease to... For most of us to kind of say, all right, hold on a minute. Heard this story before.
Yeah, I've seen this movie.
I know,
right.
I know where this one ends. It doesn't end with the translator. It generally has ended with the athlete. And so, you know, I think it's easy to sort of jump to that conclusion that Shohei must have been maybe more involved in all of this than originally, you know, suspected. So we don't know that. We're going to wait and find out. Baseball is going to have to get involved in this. If the feds are going to get involved, you know, that will be fascinating. Of all the groups, I don't see the FBI being like, hey, we're going to be lenient on Shohei Ohtani because he's a big athlete. Like, I don't think they play that way. I think they pretty much are by the book. So if there's a Shohei issue and if he was involved and if he knew about this or if it was him placing bets or if he ever met the bookie and if he vouched for his guy, that's going to come down on him. Like, eventually they will figure all of that out. So he better get a story straight. He better figure out exactly what he remembers and what he thinks happened, and it better be true. Or my guess is they're going to find a way to get him on that.
So. Where does this rank? Because the betting scandal thing for the NBA and the ref Tim Donaghy stuff, that was happening kind of when I was, I mean, I was in school. I wasn't paying attention to that, really. Yeah. Like, that was the whole era of TV I missed, too, that you like to make fun of me for. But where is this in on that fire danger scale? For how big was the betting scandal and how big potentially would this be?
The Donaghy one?
Would this dwarf it?
I mean, I thought the Donaghy story is like the biggest story of a generation. But for the most part, the public was like, okay, so we bet on games. Like, what? Just fixing professional games.
It could actually impact the NBA.
I thought it was, it did not seem to impact the NBA at all. Was it a big story? Yeah, I guess, but it didn't seem to really impact them. And by the way, I don't think this will truly impact baseball all that much either, other than that, you know, maybe it'll even put a few more eyeballs of people who want to see what's going on. But I don't think it will negatively impact them in a major way. I know there are folks saying, oh, this is, you know, their worst nightmare. And, you know, maybe they will lose a cash cow in Shohei Ohtani if everything goes wrong to the absolute worst degree. But, you know, the odds are that Shohei continues to play. Eventually this story gets forgotten and, you know, everything kind of moves forward. But for now, as we're waiting to find out and waiting to figure out exactly what's happened, yeah, it's a pretty huge story, especially leading into opening day here. It's right around the corner. We do want to send one of you with three of your friends to the game. All you got to do is open the Seattle Sports app and click the Win tab to find out how. If you don't already have the app, it's pretty easy to get. All you got to do is text APP, APP, to 866-979-3776, and we'll just send you a link to download the app. We couldn't be making this any easier on you. All you have to do is text APP to 866-979-3776. Don't miss out on your chance to join the fun at opening day. This contest will run through Sunday, March 24th. Okay. Fun day yesterday. I got some Mariner conversation I want to have with you guys. And John Schneider was on the station yesterday. We had the John Schneider show with Wyman and Bob. He had a lot to say. I'll go through that at 7:30. Before we get there, though, you got to give one group of people a huge amount of props, and we'll do it next on Brock and Salk.